The Around the NFL Podcast isn't tanking this season.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I'm joined by a room filled with some heroes, Mark Sessler and Greg Rosenthal. What is up, boys?
Oh.
We're not tanking. The Jets aren't tanking.
Bills aren't tanking.
Bills aren't tanking. Sam Darnold might be tanking, but that's save it for the Shepherding Logs podcast.
Let them unpack that.
I will send you over there if you want to talk about USC quarterbacks and hosing for Rosen and all that stuff. Go over there. This is the Professional Football Sunday flagship
show. Don't
worry
about that in February.
Presented by Head & Shoulders. Often imitated. I'm telling you, the imitators are growing for the Sunday night flagship show. Never duplicated.
Not only in-house, but all over the football world.
I'm watching you.
People jumping on this Sunday night operation.
If you are on a podcast that's all of a sudden doing a Sunday night show, I want you to know I know exactly who you are and what you're trying to do. Greg, how are you?
I'm great.
I'm great, too. I'm happy because for the second straight week, a lot of great games. It's interesting, now that I think about it, I haven't even really thought about it. The NFL was at the center of the universe, or at least our country, last week with all the anthem protests. It was not as big a storyline, at least on the surface. Maybe we're in too deep during Sunday to really know what's going on, but it didn't sense to be near what was going on last week, and that doesn't mean the story's over. But this week, I felt like it was more a standard NFL week and a lot of good games. Fair? Unfair?
Still a lot of statements, still every broadcast showing the national anthem.
Yep.
A lot of strong feelings. Certainly turned down from a week ago, though.
Yeah, I don't want to make it seem like I'm saying, like, oh, well, we're moving past that now. It's not that.
That's exactly what you're saying. No, I know you're not. Know.
Last week, all that, the NFL, forget about the games, right. Despite how good the game, that was the story of the week.
Right.
This week, that's still going on, but there's a lot of football.
I think anytime you get into the second, third, fourth iteration of something that was very new and very unusual last week, it's going to take on a bit of a different tone.
All it takes is one tweet, though.
And unfortunately,
you're right.
And there's been a lot more than one tweet. Unfortunately, there were great games today, but there was also tons. I felt like this was the first injuries really started impacting things Sunday of the year.
Hate that. Hate injuries. And there are some big ones to go over, including some of the new young stars, at least one new young star in this league impacted. We'll get to that. So much to get to. And why don't we do it? Why don't we dive in? You want to do it?
Let's go.
Let's do it. Let's start, gentlemen. And the loose cannon behind the glass. Let's start at Mile High.
They're going empty from the one!
All right, Tony, calm down. I love Tony Romo, by the way. We all love Tony Romo. But his enthusiasm, it's getting higher and bigger every week. By the end of the season, he's just going to blow a gasket. I'm a little worried about
Tony. Yeah, at one point, like, his voice was completely shot because he was just shouting. Greg is absolutely – because Greg is the guy I think of when I think about someone who loves football no matter what. You could say, this game is trash, and he'll give you eight reasons why it's a great game. Romo and Greg just need to get into a car and drive around the country together.
Sometimes I'm worried that Greg's going to lose control of his bowels sometimes. He's so excited during games. Let's hear Romo again. First and 10 from the 1 yard line.
They're going empty from the one.
And what happened? A 99 yard touchdown. I think the Raiders.
Not on that play. A nice drive.
Yeah, the drive.
It was incredible. Maybe they heard. There was a little bit of incredulity, if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
I know what you're trying to say. I think it's close.
He was surprised. And I also think it's just the stadium is so loud that he gets excited and he's almost trying to scream over the stadium.
Is it incredulous?
Incredulous is the root word.
Right, but the T-Y ending.
Yeah.
Do you know, Mark? Don't be like, you guys are both wrong, but I won't say what it is.
You're both wrong, and I don't need to get into it. Let's move on.
All right, let's talk about the game.
Manuel loads it up, home run ball that should be picked. It is at the 8. Justin Simmons with an interception at the Denver 8-yard line. And Denver's football, first and 10 with 1:46 left.
That was Dave Logan with the call. Broncos safety Justin Simmons soared in the air and high-pointed the game-sealing interception, sealing a 16-10 win for the Broncos over the Raiders in a meeting of forever rivals at Mile High. That costly pick was thrown by E.J. Manuel, as you heard, who replaced Derek Carr after Carr exited the game in the second half with a lower back injury. He got kneed in the back. I believe, Mark, there is some talk that that he has back spasms, but no, it's not some type of hardcore Tony Romo injury. At least that's the initial thought, that he dodged a bullet there. But, Greg, this was kind of like a 2015-like Broncos win, right? Score enough points, let your defense close it out.
It was, in that they dominated up front on both sides of the ball, and that's what really impressed me. They ran the ball very well, and I think you got to look at the game in two parts. When Carr went out for the Raiders, it was almost as if the Broncos sat on that lead a little too much. But they were running the ball extremely well against Oakland, and more worrisome for the Raiders is that Denver was dominating the game up front when the Raiders had the ball. So now this is 2 weeks in a row that the Raiders, who people thought, okay, maybe this is the best offensive line in the league, aren't blowing open any holes in the running game. Marshawn Lynch held to 12 yards. I believe they had 24 yards as a team.
That's right.
That's outrageous. And Derek Carr was taking some hits. I'm not saying it was just a field day on him, but Von Miller, Derek Wolfe, Shelby Harris, Pecco has been a big factor in terms of the running game, Shaq Barrett. Suddenly you've got one of the better fronts in the league, along with your friends in the old no-fly zone.
Oh,
now
yeah.
You're trying to get the Rocky Mountain Avalanche.
The Rocky Mountain
happening.
Avalanche.
But it's not happening, and now you found another star potentially in Justin Simmons. This is why they cut T.J. Ward, because this guy is so athletic, and he made a game-sealing play.
So encouraging for Denver. Coming out of that loss in Buffalo, where I looked at it and said, after they had beaten the Cowboys so decisively the week before, is this going to be a week-to-week type of team where you can't really predict what you're going to get? Back to their formula with C.J. Anderson, and how good does Jamaal Charles look right now? He looks revived and young and powerful and fast. I think they have the kind of backfield where you can hit him in so many different ways.
They're doing a nice job with him, too. They're not overusing him. I imagine if he continues to look good week after week, he'll start to get more and more work. But C.J. Anderson is doing the job as the primary ball carrier, and then Charles is kind of the breath of fresh air. I would look out here on the – on the Raiders' side of the ball, you know, they're going to be putting a lot on Carr if the running game can't get going. I'm not making any statements about Marshawn Lynch maybe not being Marshawn Lynch anymore, but since week two, this is three games now, he's averaging less than 3 yards a carry, so he has not been running people over with regularity like the old beast mode. And Carr's going to need help, and you hope he's going to be on the field. But this is two straight weeks now, Greg, where the Raiders, who are supposed to be an AFC superpower, look highly mortal.
Especially on offense, and that's what they're supposed to be built around. Defense played well enough to win. They got enough stops. The Raiders actually moved the ball better when E.J. Manuel came in. I don't think that would continue for very long. Jack Del Rio did say, we should mention, that he believes that Carr's back spasms should be cleaned up quickly. I'm not sure how you know that right off the bat. He said there'll be some precautionary tests. They host the Ravens next week. But that, I just think it's going to be really hard for any of these teams to go into Denver and get a win against this defense, because I still feel like they have room to grow on offense that they didn't even really show today.
All right, let's move on.
First down, Goff takes the handoff on the fly sweep and throws down the seam. It's caught. 35-30. Inside move. Gurley's going to go. 10-5. Touchdown, L.A.
Todd Gurley's 53-yard catch and run put his team ahead in the third quarter. And Greg the Leg Zuerlein, or Legatron, it's really your choice, dealer's choice.
Have it either way.
Hit all seven of his field goal attempts, Marone, to lead the Los Angeles Rams to a 35-30 upset win over the Cowboys in Big D. Jared Goff didn't turn the ball over, and Todd Gurley again played like a star. And now the Rams are 3-1. And let's face it, they're one of the NFL surprises at the regular season quarter poll. No way around it.
It's incredible to me that, yes, there are some new pieces here, but what an indictment on the previous coaching staff to have so many similar
Jeff
weapons.
Poor Jeff Fisher gets dragged every
week
on this
podcast. Well, I'm sorry, but that's why the Rams, Sean McVay, and the combination of Sean McVay and Wade Phillips have turned the Rams into one of the most watchable, enjoyable, and encouraging stories of the NFL season, with so many of the same tools that the last coaching staff could not handle.
Here's one thing, and I'll say, Fisher didn't do a good job with the talent, and I don't know if at that stage of his career if he was invested enough to really be a successful coach. But I will say that it's not all on Jeff Fisher. For instance, Andrew Wentworth, he's become one of the top players on this team. He's had one hurry, I believe, all season. So all of a sudden they have a lockdown left tackle, and that does wonders for a young quarterback. So by getting the right coaches around Goff, that's helped him a lot. But also there have been some big additions to this team.
Les Snead, their general manager, and Sean McVay, who's certainly part of the, you know, player personnel process, but it's Snead running the show, had an incredible offseason. Think of who's, you know, the weapons for Jared Goff. Cooper Kupp, Robert Woods, Sammy Watkins, and Whitworth. So those are all pickups, and they're all coming through. I do think it should be noted for the Cowboys, who started out this game well, they were missing Sean Lee. And when I saw that before the game, I thought this team is going to have trouble getting stops, as it was, because they're missing two young players in the secondary. They're already not very good there, and they're missing two key contributors. And then you take away Sean Lee. I think, you know, Dave Damaschuk has the Jenga piece theory. Mm-hmm. Sean Lee is the Jenga piece for that defense. And when he's not on the field, I expected the Rams to get some points.
The Rams offensive line, which has been so rough so many years. The Wentworth thing, absolutely. He's a huge addition. One sack for the Cowboys after the Cowboys in Dallas looked so ferocious the last couple of weeks with DeMarcus Lawrence and company.
And if you watch this game, you were taken by, and hats off to Wade Phillips, who got a game ball afterwards, beating his old team, a team that fired him once upon a time. But the Cowboys were, it was almost like they were toying with the Rams in the first half of this game. Dez Bryant was involved. Dak Prescott was making plays like an offensive rookie of the year did last year. Zeke looked like the Zeke of last year. And it just, even when the Rams are doing a nice job, usually with a Zuerlein field goal to stay in the game and within striking distance, you kind of had the feeling it was just a matter of time before the Cowboys put them away. So you really got to give the Rams a ton of credit for being able to stop that momentum on the road and then be able to take the game and then hold on to the victory. This is a big boy win.
Jerry Jones said after the game he's never seen an assistant coach do a better job giving his old friend Wade Phillips some love in terms of halftime adjustments. They came out after halftime, three punts and an interception, and that's what turned the game around. Because the Rams never really stopped scoring. They only were punted twice the whole game, and they didn't turn the ball over. That's ridiculous. This is an incredibly explosive offense. It's one of the most fun teams in the league. We know Chris Wessling's back at his abode enjoying this Rams victory today.
He's enjoying the Rams. He pegged the Rams back in the summer as a team that can make a playoff run this year. We all like the Rams, and geez, let's talk about it.
Who will be the team of Vegas?
I think it's time to call a vote, guys.
That's the director's cut right there.
Yeah, we've been dancing around the Rams for a couple of weeks now, and we get a lot of slack about, you know, not the instant messenger client.
Of course not. Flack.
We get a lot of flack about you guys take so long to pick a team ATL. All right.
We've been waiting to be whole. We're missing one of the four horsemen here.
But here's the thing. Wes is plugged in on the Rams. He's been on board. We reached out to Wes. He signed off on the idea of the Rams being the team of ATL. So let's put a vote. Let's take it to a vote. Let's send it to a vote.
Listen.
Mark.
Let's start right here. A lot of times it's the logjam between the four of us that cannot agree and it's leaves. So one or two people interested in the team of ATL, two others typically faking it. Or like last year it created total division when we picked the Vikings and then they crumbled.
In your case, paranoia. But yeah.
Yeah, paranoia, division. You choose whatever words you'd
fury.
Want to choose.
I would throw fury in there too.
No one right now can look at this team and say they don't match the core elements of team of ATL.
What are those core elements?
For me, they have to be fun to watch. They're not getting in my way of like my personal team, and no one is at this point, so that's fine.
The Browns are doing a good job.
Yeah, I am enjoying the coaching staff on down. The coaching element's important to me. I easily, happily sign off on the Rams.
Okay, I will second that absolutely. What do you like in a team at ATL? It's a fun team. It's a young team. You like the coaching staff. Son of Bums involved. And it's a local team. And I know they're probably NFL fans in St. Louis. It's like, how dare you? Well, the Rams were an L.A. team before they were a St. Louis team. It's not the same issue of betrayal right. that some people threw out there with the Chargers, and perhaps rightly so. So I don't. That's not a hang up for me. So I rubber stamp it. Yes, Wes already has signed off. So Greg,
come on, Greg.
Don't do the Greg thing. Don't do it. Don't do it. You gotta go with us on this one, buddy.
I love it, and all I can think about right now is somewhere in the Paramore mansion, the Paramore is listening to this, and she is the biggest Rams fan on the earth, and
that's right.
She is hoping and praying as this final vote's sitting out there, and I just got to say, this one's for the Paramore. Let's do it!
So they are the 2017 team of ATL/ATN is the Los Angeles Rams. Do not let us down like the Vikings did last year. That's our only warning.
I'm also fine if the season takes on a weird thing, but is this the earliest we picked a team? I feel like the Panthers, when we started this, was around the same time. Other
Panthers
seasons, it took way too long.
Panthers was early, week 4 or 5, yeah.
All right, enough of the navel gazing. Let's move on. More football.
Snap, spot, kick is on the way. End over end, and it is good.
There we go.
The Panthers
yes.
have come to New England and beaten the defending Super Bowl champion New England Patriots in a wild one, 33-30.
And we said quickly, if you keep this game close, Graham Gano at the end with a field goal to win the game. Way to go.
Yeah, they're pumped up, and so am I, WBT Mick, mixing with the call. Oh, yeah, we're heading to the throne of sleaze.
You don't have a choice.
Here we go. She does not want to play this.
Graham Gano hit a 48-yard field goal as time expired. The Carolina Panthers stunned the New England Patriots 33-30 at Gillette. It was yet another long day for Matt Patricia's defense as New England surrendered 444 total yards and made Cam Newton look like an MVP again. Greg, this is becoming a theme. Patriots have a big problem to solve.
Well, there's no more use of the word stun when the worst defense in the league loses a game for the Patriots. I don't know. I don't think there'll be the worst defense in the league at the end of the season, but right now they can't get stops. They give up yards. They give up points. They don't get turnovers. Stephon Gilmore is going to really get picked on this week in the Boston media, so we'll see how that goes because he had two key penalties in the game that kept drives alive, including the game-winning drive. Otherwise, the Panthers would have been punting right there, and everyone thought it was going to be another miracle comeback victory where Tom Brady
seemed destined,
who has too much on his shoulders right now, again led them back. But they're searching for answers on defense, and until they start stacking a couple solid games, I don't think any result with this team is stunning.
Speaking of the Paramore and our other Throne of Sleaze hit where the aliens zap Foxborough and her words, how great for our planet. I'm not saying that it's great for everyone. I understand that Tamposi behind the glass is like very, very horrified to witness this season thus far. But
I haven't seen her blink
listen,
today.
How was it when Danny Amendola took that gigantic hit?
Your great, boy, Danny.
A great third down catch, but did that, you know, kind of hurt you too?
Aren't you a Patriots fan?
I am. I have to get over it by the time we're taping. At the moment, I was certainly annoyed, but we got to tape
Greg
it.
Is a, Greg is
professional.
A first and foremost, Greg is a master troll. Then
seriously.
No. That like, is not true.
You're so excited. You're excited right now.
Hey, here's a message to Patriots fans. It's week 4. You've won more games and more Super Bowls than you could ever hope for, including two of the more fortunate ones in the last 3 years. As a Patriots fan, all I ever hoped to get to was that 4th Super Bowl. They now have 5. And newsflash, football doesn't really matter that much for an organization like the Patriots until November, December, and rounding into form. So wait and see how this goes. But I think they've earned some benefit of the doubt to like, let it play out.
Right.
That's
rest
all.
Your head on your pillow until the Red Sox start
right.
the playoff run on Wednesday. Deal
well, we,
with it,
yeah, we had an executive, and this is an adult, in our office who, you know,
who's
experienced a lot of success and stormed out of his closed office, out of the building
well-known
when New England
Boston
fell.
Fan, yeah.
You know, an old school Patriots fan. But the one caution I'd say is that, again, we say this every week, it's usually on offense, but the Patriots – are one of the best teams in the NFL in the past, in this century, of figuring out their issues and moving on. But I really think that something here feels a little bit different. They are shorthanded on defense, and I am also concerned about their offensive line. Brady, again, getting
for
wet.
Sure. Brady is playing as well or better than he did yet last year, and they're 2-2.
And I don't want to shortchange the Panthers, which we're going to, because we got to keep moving.
Let's talk about them a little.
We will. And we're going to get into them a little bit here, and then just know that we're going to talk about them during the week. But this was a huge, huge game for Cam Newton, who has had a lot of people across the football cognoscenti asking whether he is healthy, whether he can throw the ball. And this was an MVP-type game. 3 touchdowns, 316 yards. He ran the ball well, 8 for 44, and another score. Kelvin Benjamin, who looked like he might have blown out his knee last week, had 4 catches on 4 targets for 104 yards, and they were able to close out the game, which teams struggled to do at Gillette. It was a big, big win for Carolina.
A lot of blown coverages, but also accurate intermediate and down the field. I don't think Cam Newton's looked that bad all year. I think he's looked better than people think, and he's definitely a little more explosive as a runner. And they used it more today, but when he's had to scramble this year, he's looked really good, and I think Devin Funchess deserves a big-time game ball. That's the first time I've ever
You're
said
handing
that.
Out the game ball?
I'm you giving really the game ball out. Funchess was clearly...
Greg has jumped ship entirely on his team.
He was clearly injured, had a big game, 7 for 70 and 2 touchdowns, fighting through a groin injury. He's on the sideline, practically hobbles out on the field for a 3rd and 2. He runs the route, catches the first down. That sets up the game-winning field goal. If it was some player that gets noticed, like that was a Willis Reed type of moment.
This is like a guy wisely cashing out on his like Krispy Kreme stock right before the bottom falls out. That's the way it feels like with Greg.
I was very disappointed when they lost, but you know, you move on.
And finally, before we move on, you know, over the years, and it is literally years on this podcast, we've heard a lot of Scott Zolak all pumped up. So in this one case, I said, hey, Erica, would you mind grabbing the Patriots sound of the game-winning field goal for Carolina as well?
Love it.
You know, with 12 field goal attempts.
Come on, Scotty, let's hear you.
In a staggered pose, the snap on the spot, the kick is airborne to the uprights. The kick is good. And Carolina has come into Foxborough and will go away with a 33-30 victory over the Patriots.
Where are you, Scotty? Maybe it comes in after that cut. I don't know.
I mean, very quiet, though.
All I heard was, got it.
Uncharacteristic for Zola.
Oh, yeah. Sorry if the professionalism caught you off guard, Dan. Maybe you should try some of your own.
I don't have it. Don't need it. Don't want it.
All right. For most guys, shopping can be a total pain. Correct, Greg?
I hate it.
Bombfell is an online personal styling service that helps men find the right clothes for them. It's simple and it's straightforward, Dan. All you have to do is complete a questionnaire and a dedicated personal stylist will handpick pieces specifically for you. Then once you've viewed your selections, you'll have 48 hours to make any changes or even cancel altogether. You can cancel it. You're in total control and you can only pay for the clothes that you keep. Plus, you have the option of receiving clothes once every 1, 2, or 3 months. Because Bombfell is on your side and they don't make money if you don't find something you want to keep. Now, I am going to use this service, Greg. How about you? You going to try this thing?
I'm concerned that Dan's just choosing this time to eat his dinner.
Dan got up and left. Totally He's not on board. We
totally
are on board. Out. Best of all, we've negotiated with Bombfell to get our listeners a special offer of $25 off your first purchase when you go to bombfell.com/around. That's Bombfell, spelled BOMBFELL.com/around. Bombfell, open and close.
If anyone needs that, it's definitely you guys.
I know. I think people are starting to realize that I've worn the same shirt on literally every single television hit we've ever done.
Ever.
All right, let's move on to an overtime affair in the desert.
Back to throw goes Palmer, looks over the middle, throws end zone for Fitz, goes up, and makes the game-winning catch! Larry Legend does it again! Touchdown! Cardinals win!
Wow, Larry Legend. Is that being thrown around in Arizona? That's fair, but that's kind of Larry Bird's thing, isn't it?
It was. Yeah.
They're playing on the fact that most sports fans, under a certain age, don't even have no memory of watching Larry Bird play.
I mean, they are both undoubtedly named Larry in both our legends.
For sure. Dave Pasch with the call. Larry Fitzgerald's 19-yard touchdown reception late in overtime gave the Arizona Cardinals a badly needed 18-15 win over the San Francisco 49ers. We now welcome in, he's our sixth man of the year, the ever-muscular, ever-Ohioan. Ohioan?
Ohioan.
Ohioite?
Ohioan, yeah. That works.
We got another Ohioite behind the glass, Lindsay Fulton, joining the team. Hi, Linz.
She's not on a mic, but she waves.
Yeah. She smiled. Anyway, the ever-muscular Nick Shook. Nick, the Cardinals really needed this game, and that old Carson to Larry Legend hookup bailed him out again.
It was four quarters of not a lot of action, a lot of field goals. If you like kickers, you'll enjoy this game. And then it took, you know, less than 2 minutes for them to get down the field. I was sitting there watching the game going, where was this the whole time? Why are they suddenly, you know, finding spaces to roam? But, you know, when you face a defense that's kind of playing soft under, trying to prevent the big play, and then ultimately gives up the big play.
Because they were coming. It was an overtime game where it's San Francisco, and I like this 10-minute overtime. It speeds everything up and makes everything a little more tense. And you saw in this game, because the 49ers had a long field goal drive, and suddenly the Cardinals didn't have a ton of time to score that touchdown or possibly tie.
It's a good point you make, Greg, but there is another overtime game we'll get to between the Jets and Jaguars where 10 minutes led to no urgency. But your overall point, I stand by.
Even that, I think as a fan, it makes it more tense.
Yeah. I mean, I have to agree too. I thought as you watch the 49ers methodically get down the field, and I don't know if I've seen a team hold on to the ball that long in overtime, especially in a long time, if ever. So in this instance, I was like, this game's over. They're going to kick this field goal. There's no way they're going to go 80 yards down the field. They've been stuck all day, because you got to give a lot of credit to the Niners' pass rush. It's pretty good, and they did a pretty good job for most of the game today until it really mattered most.
Well, that would be my question, because they're 0-4, and that is what it is. At the same time, they nearly beat a very good Rams team last week, overcoming some of their own mistakes early. And you go into overtime today, they're in these games at least. It's a much different situation than last year.
Seattle. There's hope. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
You feel any different about the Cardinals after watching this?
No. The Cardinals' problem is
they're a tough watch.
They are a tough watch because they can't protect Carson Palmer. And other teams know it, and they tee off on him a lot. The guy's getting beat up.
I mean, he can't move either, right? No, so it's one of those bad combination situations.
Yeah, they can't run the ball.
Not really with any effectiveness. They did use Andre Ellington out of the backfield pretty well in the passing game today, which was encouraging to see. You like to see him get the ball in space. He was David Johnson before David Johnson, kind of. Not as good, obviously, but played a similar role.
It's kind of amazing Fitzgerald has an epic game-winning overtime touchdown catch that he got shaken up in the same week that he set a record for receptions on Monday Night Football, had one of his all-time games then. It's like he's penning a memorable season, even if the rest of the team isn't.
Yeah, we'll see where they go, because they show the ability to still score like they did today. They're just not as good as they were a few years ago offensively. Their defense is...
And Arians never puts in extra linemen. That's one thing that teams know, is he does not believe in that. So they just...
It might be time to subscribe to that concept.
They're five and a chip at most, and that's not going to help if you guys aren't blocking up the par.
And one more note from this game, Tyrann Mathieu, who we talked about, someone on that defense, some of these big names needs to step up, 11 tackles and a sack. That's the type of game that they're looking for from Honey Badger and their other star players as they try to make something of a season that is lacking David Johnson. Let's move on.
Dalton back to throw again, dumps it off short. Giovanni Bernard sprinting to the 45, 50.
Wow.
Down Browns territory to
See
the 30.
Ya.
Nobody's going to catch Giovanni Bernard as he takes it. 61 yards.
Woo.
About a 3-yard pass downfield by Andy Dalton and a 61-yard sprint.
WCKY Dan Horton, Dave Lapham with the call. Need to get healthy? Play the Browns. Andy Dalton threw four touchdown passes, including that 61-yard connection with Gio Bernard, as the Bengals rolled to a 31-7 win over the winless Cleveland Browns. Shook the football cognoscenti. Wrote the Bengals off at 0-3, and they might be still done, even at 1-3. But a comeback has to start somewhere, and Cleveland was a good place to begin.
Okay, so two things here. All this week, I saw the hot pick and was to go Browns over Bengals. Browns are getting their first win this week. The Bengals are horrible. And then I thought to myself, Did you guys not watch the game against the Packers last week? The Bengals were pretty competitive.
Right.
And right now, you know, are the Browns competing for the playoffs? Absolutely not. I know it's early, but they're not at that level.
Well, it's early and it's also too late.
Yes, absolutely. And are the Bengals there? No. They're both not really good teams, but they're on totally different planes, and there's a very large gap in between. And we saw that today.
I don't think anyone expected it to be 31-0 type of gap, though.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's bottoming out. The Browns were very competitive the first 2 weeks. You could argue they outplayed the Ravens and Steelers for much of those games. Yet they're down 31-0. It has to feel like a pretty big step backwards for this Hugh Jackson regime.
Yeah, he said it after the game. This is the worst they've played all year, and by a long shot. And it definitely looked like
and
that.
We talked about Joe Mixon maybe having a breakout game, and no Danny Shelton, no Jamie Collins, that they'd be vulnerable. They actually did an okay job containing the run, but they let Andy Dalton, who's been, let's face it, dreadful this season, play a lights-out game, 25 of 30, 286, four touchdowns. Mark, I joked with you a lot about me coming for your corner, and I feel bad. I honestly do, because it feels like here we are again. It's October, and the Browns seem as lost as ever.
I'm looking at the box score on my laptop here, and under Cleveland passing, it says no Cleveland passing, and under Cleveland rushing, it says no Cleveland rushing. Obviously an error.
I don't know.
But the entire team felt like an error today, and it's a decisive step back. In a game, this is Hugh Jackson. What head coach in the league, outside of Marvin Lewis, knows the Bengals better with so many of the same players in place that this is
the
game.
It goes both ways.
It goes both ways, but I would just say that Cleveland still, they've got a lot of young players on their team. It does not equate to talent necessarily, and they feel as far away right now as they did at any point last season. And I wonder how long you keep the faith of this city, who's packed this stadium year after year since the turn of the century, no matter what, and basically threw a lot of junk.
Well, and they've also got, again, if you look at the city of Cleveland, they have a 101-win Indians team. They're pumped up trying to finally get a World Series win. You can't just assume forever these fans are just going to wait for a brighter day, because you have to show some evidence, and we're gonna get to Deshaun Watson in a bit. Like, again, just like you passed on Carson Wentz 2 years ago, now it looks like you might have passed on another superstar when you were at the top of the draft. God, it's just such a frustrating situation.
Today, I started receiving the, Browns blew it on Watson texts, which I knew were going to come if he put enough good games together. But, yeah, with this team, this is the first time in the Hugh Jackson era where I've watched them and thought they are at rock bottom. Now, last year, obviously, you don't win a game until the very end of the season, pretty much.
Right. That was under a honeymoon scenario to some degree.
Well, that, and you knew the roster gutting, and that was going to be part of it. Whereas now you're in year two, and you come in with some optimism. They're competitive for a couple weeks, and they take a step back against Indianapolis. And today it was like, oh, man, you know, this they might have to blow this up again.
And quickly on the Bengals, no one rushes the passer, I think, worse right now than the Browns. So they make quarterbacks look healthy. Andy Dalton, four touchdowns, five incompletions. This is not a terrible team. They were ahead in Green Bay. They, you know, lost late to the Texans. I don't think they're a good team, but there are still pieces there that if a couple things had broken their way a little differently, they could easily be 2-2 or 3-1 now. And I'm not saying their season's not over in a division that's a little weird.
Well, I also think a lot of credit is due to Bill Lazor. I mean, I know he was already on the staff.
Whoa!
That actually scared me, and I knew it was coming.
That was serious.
That was a lot of lasers. he's done a really good job just utilizing the talent that they weren't really using before. And it wasn't that big of a change in scheme, but, you know, a game like today and a game like last week really kind of got you familiar with their backfield.
And you see why coordinators get fired all the time, especially offensive coordinators, because it really does sometimes work and give a spark. Do you want to stick around, Shook, for as we close out the AFC North?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's close out the AFC North.
Ben gets the shotgun snap. He's back. He waits. He pumps. He still pumps. He fires, and that's a touchdown for Juju Smith-Schuster from 11 yards out. Ben showed the patience of Job. Stood, pumped, stood,
it's a bit
looked,
much.
And here came Juju right to left. Nobody covering. Touchdown, Pittsburgh.
Patience of Job.
Bill, Job reference in a huge spot.
A big spot. Bill Hillgrove of WDVE with the call. Ben Roethlisberger and Juju Smith-Schuster connected early, and Le'Veon Bell finally busted out with 144 yards and two scores to lead the Steelers to a 26-9 win over the rival Ravens in Baltimore. Mark, this was the first Pittsburgh road win against the Ravens since 2012, and you know what? They made it look easy.
Yeah, I mean, I thought coming out of that London game with the Ravens, I get it's the Steelers. They, in theory, are kind of loaded on paper. We haven't seen it all come to fruition on the field this season. But you're Baltimore. You gave up 10 points over the first 2 weeks of the season against the bottom of the barrel in the AFC North. I get that. But now you've given up 70 points in the past 2 weeks, and you can't blame London. You can't blame the flight over, the hotel accommodations, whatever it was you put in your body across the sea.
Huh?
You're now back, and you just got waxed in a team against a team that you know so well, and it leaves me very concerned about the Ravens. I just think at this point they're already back against the wall, and for Pittsburgh, I guess it was fair to wonder when Le'Veon Bell would have this kind of game. It's not going to happen probably in his first appearance, but he was used heavily as a workhorse today.
39 touches.
Yep. James Conner, though, I think is a nice supporting guy to give him a spell here.
They need
here
to use him more because you're going to fall apart if you have 39 touches every week for 186 yards, but that's a lot.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, but you know what? At the same time, he didn't get that training camp, and I know we're in week four now, so we're past that, but he kind of needs that physical work outside of the practice field to kind of finally get acclimated.
And he is, and I think for the Steelers, we've talked about when are they finally going to be a balanced team? Not so much pass run, but offense, defense. It was one of our making the leap picks this year. They came into this game as the number four defense in the league, according to Football Outsiders, and they did another nice job. I know they're not playing a great defense, but they get Stephon Tuitt back. He had a huge play in this game. You have Cameron Hayward playing really well. You have Shazier playing well. Like that. Like this idea that the Steelers now can win a few different ways, maybe they don't need to have the best offense in the league. Maybe they just need to have a top 10 offense.
Our show, it's funny how we could kind of have similar groupthink on things. Earlier in the summer, we were all like, how are the Ravens going to score points? They seem like a total also-ran team. And then their defense heated up, and we were all like, oh, the Ravens are going to be frisky, maybe 10, 11 wins. But now, it's come full circle, and it's like, God, these guys are going to struggle to score 20 points all year. That's going to put too much pressure on the defense. And I'm back to thinking that this is a 7-9 team that needs reinforcements. And they invested a bunch of draft picks on the defensive side of the ball. And that I don't want to, nobody's allowed to say anything bad about Ozzie Newsome's team building skills, and I'm certainly not an expert enough to do it, but I will, because that's the type of man I am. He should have drafted some offensive players, and I'm sure they'll rectify that in April. But
and
it might
for
not
the
save
third or fourth
year
in a row, I mean, this has been Baltimore's offense from the passing game angle for so long now.
I mean, they're running the ball with Buck Allen and Alex Collins. They threw the ball 49 times. Not one of those times did the team gain more than 16 yards. I mean, they threw the ball 10 times to Macklin and Perriman for 27 yards. They're just
desperation.
They're not an explosive offense at all, and I don't know.
They need
how that's going to change.
And their quarterback could have used a preseason and a summer, but the back injury didn't let him do it. Shook, thank you for stopping by.
Hey,
reigning sixth man of the year. You're our J.R. Smith.
Yes.
Less tattoos, more shirts.
I have the J.R. Smith tattoo shirt.
Off to the gym now.
Pumping.
Yeah, perhaps.
Get a pump in?
Yeah.
So much more resilient than I am. Like, quickly back to my house, like, eating Doritos.
All right. Shook off to get a pump in.
Thanks, guys.
That's we say those type of things.
That's what we say.
At the gym together. Let's move on.
That was a Sessler lock that came.
Oh, that's right.
That's what that was.
Did you do it?
I locked it up, baby.
That ends the slump.
And what a slump it was. Because I think if you were to actually look at the tail end of last season.
You got to bring it up, by the way. I know you're a humble man, but stand up, be brassy.
Kind of totally forgot about it. I'm 3 feet away from Shook's upper body. I just, like, I'm all discombobulated.
You're all on Twitter.
Yeah.
But yeah, that ends. You were 0-3 on locks. Your Super Bowl team's still winless, and your real team is winless.
Both of them.
But now you got a lock.
Yeah, the season in general off to a banner start.
All right, let's move on. Speaking of locks,
Matt Cassel, a quarterback. Oof. Takes the shotgun snap, blitzes on up the gut. They pick it up well. He fires, intercepted! Picked off Dylan Cole, and he's going to storm it back for a score! High steps left side of the end zone. Touchdown, Texans! 53-14 with 8:31 remaining in the fourth quarter.
Oh, Mark Vandermeer of KILT with the call. Let there be no debate. The Houston Texans at long last have their franchise quarterback. Deshaun Watson threw for 4 touchdowns and ran for another. A dominant performance in the Texans' 57-14 destruction of the so-called Tennessee Titans. Let's calm down with that. Houston's 50-burger represents the most points scored in their 16-year history. It also represents, by far, the most decisive lock-off triumph of all time! Hit it, Tampa C! And then hit it one more time! No, not that, Erica! We discussed this! Hit me with it!
Get your damn hands.
Shocker.
Get you know, hold on.
Kansas is the man's best radio read. Now listen to the sounds from around the league.
Okay, hold on a second.
This was not played when you lost the lock.
Yeah, I was going to say, back the truck up here just a few blocks, please. Because obviously we know the lock went in your favor. Congratulations.
Did it?
Excellent prognostication.
Yeah, it looks like it did.
I'm just saying, what would that last 2 minutes have been like had Greg won?
Probably less charismatic, I would say.
Yes, just
what I'm saying is, when you have a lock-off, it happens rarely, and Greg defeated me in a lock-off just last week, was it? Or maybe the week before.
Who knows? It went by as a whisper to
the
listener.
No one really
cares.
So, but in this case, when you have a lock-off, and that means if you're new to the show, you know, we both pick locks for we're more certain about any other team to win, and it just happened to be the same game. And then the team that you lock drops a 50-burger?
That's bad.
Anyway, it was a decisive victory for you.
And more importantly, maybe not to me, but more importantly,
What could be more important?
In the big picture.
1A for the Texans. You're one.
Big, big, big victory for the Houston Texans, who, let's face it, the AFC right now is wide open with the Patriots having serious problems with no guarantee that they're going to get on track, at least not anytime
soon. That's interesting, because you told me the whole season was canceled before it started and there couldn't be any defensive problems or anything. Like, I know everything. Football's unpredictable?
Somebody's salty. Anyway, my point is the Houston Texans have a quarterback and they have a defense and they have a pretty good coach. Mark, are a real team to reckon with in this conference now.
I mean, the last 8 quarters by this offense, throw out the opener they lost with the hurricane situation, everything that happened to them, what they did against the New England Patriots, and then what they did by capping it off today by utter destruction of Dick LeBeau and the Tennessee Titans defense. Dick LeBeau, who's something like 27-5, I don't know the number, but it's close, against rookie quarterbacks.
Good research.
Dominated today, and Deshaun Watson is so fun to watch. The way he extends the play, and just the guy, the vision today, the downfield passing, the whole Texans offense, which has been such a liability for so long under Bill O'Brien, has become the story of the AFC, and their defense is fine too, but it's like, whoever would have thought that Deshaun Watson, who all summer long were being told is buried behind Tom Savage, and here he comes. He looks like the quarterback of the conference right now. Fascinating turn of events.
There's never been a greater call to deep six. Training camp, coverage,
bury it.
Preseason games.
End it.
He struggled. Watson struggled more than the other rookie quarterbacks, no doubt.
Well, then that's the other point, though. His transformation and his growth over the course of this first month of the NFL season, it's tough to think of too many quarterbacks that have done it that quickly.
Well, the preseason is such a different thing, because you're not game planning for a specific opponent all week, and we're seeing, and maybe O'Brien clearly didn't expect it to go this well, or else he would have been the week one starter, but we're seeing the impact of O'Brien being able to tailor a game plan around Watson and just the special things when the lights turn on that Watson can
do. Bill O'Brien, the time of his life today.
Yeah, and you sound like the guy from the Monday Night Football recap opener. What was his name? Sergio Dipp?
Thanks a lot for that reference. But honestly,
Bill O'Brien, I honestly think
behind the scenes, Bill O'Brien and the Texans, Bill O'Brien's been at odds with that team, with the front office. They've gone through a million quarterbacks. He's never had a quarterback to work with. He finally does. What a difference it makes.
I want you to have, Mark, I would love for you to have a confessional YouTube video or a Twitter video posted from a hotel room late tonight talking about your Bill O'Brien comment.
Oh, it won't be talking about that.
This team is so much more interesting and entertaining in the future. Let's see how defenses adjust and what you know, Deshaun Watson's doing in the middle of November. The more shocking part of this game to me is the fact that, like Tennessee, just last year in Jacksonville in week 16, just when you think they finally turned the corner, they get hammered by a division opponent in a spot that you didn't expect. Yes, Marcus Mariota got hurt in this game, but he had already been intercepted twice. The defense had given up 31 points in the first five possessions for Houston, so it really wasn't about the injury to Marcus Mariota. It was a full-scale beatdown, 33 first downs to 9 for the Titans. You just do not see that in the NFL. That's the type of thing you see, you know, when the SEC is scheduling non-conference people.
Good college rep, Greg.
I like that, Greg.
It's crazy.
And just one more note to Tennessee fans out there. Respect and proper pronunciation is earned. Let's move on.
Let's hope that hamstring is okay. MRI on Monday.
Well, because otherwise it means a big dose of Matt Cassel that no one on earth needs right now.
Steven Hauschka from 56 yards out. He's made 9 in a row from 50 or more. On its way. And good.
Greg Gumbel, CBS, with the call. Steven Hauschka.
Mark that for our top 10.
Yeah, when you can get Gumbel on a prosaic, mundane call like that, you got to go with it.
That is a 56-yard field goal, Greg Gumbel, I'm speaking to, with less than 5 minutes remaining. And it put the Bills ahead of the defending NFC Conference champions. He hit another 50-yarder a little bit later. Final score 23-17 because the Bills then went down and got a stop on defense deep in their own territory. The Falcons lost the game, also lost wide receiver Julio Jones, who exited with a hip injury. As for the Bills, hey, guys, Greg, look at the Bills, 3-1, first place in the AFC East.
Talking to Greg Gumbel or Greg Rosenthal?
I don't know.
Get excited, all the Gregs. Sole possession of first place. This team is going to give up some yards, and they did early in the game, but they're just so well coached in terms of tackling and situational football and red zone defense. And, you know, you have to mention that Julio Jones left this game in the first half with an injury, a hip injury. Mohamed Sanu went out quickly afterwards. And so suddenly their wide receivers are Taylor Gabriel and Justin Hardy. Those two receivers had 11 targets for 12 yards. That is a total disaster on the outside. But give the Bills defense credit for taking advantage, and especially Tyrod Taylor and LeSean McCoy. Their numbers don't pop at you, but you can just find about four or five plays. McCoy picking up a first down on a 3rd and 17 on a screen that keeps the drive going, and they score a touchdown. Tyrod with a bomb that he escaped a couple defenders and throws it down the field. These are just kind of individual plays. It's not the scheme doing it, but they've made enough of these individual plays to win 3 out of 4 games. I'm really impressed.
I like that we have a Sean versus Sean lock-off in my book right now for Coach of the Year. You got Sean McVay and Sean McDermott, who this is a team, we're going to keep saying it, they talked about them tanking in August because of personnel moves they made. Sean McDermott, like he did in Carolina, finds ways to take role players and really make them into big contributors. The Bills handled this game. This was on the road, by the way. I think that Buffalo has to be taken very seriously.
How serious?
I would take them seriously. Like they are extremely well coached. They're not an easy out, and especially in Buffalo.
I think
they did this with that two starting defensive linemen as well. Matt Ryan certainly did not have a good day, but you have to give credit to the Bills for that.
No, and there's no hiding. It's not like the Falcons are struggling on offense, but compared to last year,
they had 390 yards in this game. Without
to lose the two guys they lost, that Taylor Gabriel is not your number one dude.
They moved the ball. This was not a game, if you watch it, that you think, okay, the Bills were the better team necessarily. It was an even game. If anything, the Falcons moved the ball better.
And let's face it, the Falcons were due a loss like this. They'd been stealing wins for, which they earned, of course, but they were 3-0, easily could have been 1-2, and they were in striking distance of potentially stealing another game. So kudos to the Bills defense for getting the stop and getting the win. I want to play, we got to keep moving, but I want to play our friend LeSean McCoy, a man that maybe he doesn't know how to tip too well. Maybe he's not the best at organizing parties featuring both sexes. But the man really knows how to have a chip on his shoulder. Let's listen to Shady in the locker room after the game.
Y'all picked us to lose, so y'all come talk to the winners. Come on, come talk to us. We want to talk. Y'all picked us to lose, but we want to talk to the winners, right? Y'all want to talk to the winners, right? we're supposed to lose tonight, today. What we want is to come talk to the winners. Yeah, in Atlanta.
Wow. John Scott with that video on Twitter from SBEC News Buffalo.
That was a theme. Cam Newton also was upset.
And why I take him seriously, because if you told Bills fans who were down in the dumps 4 weeks ago that by week four you would have back-to-back wins against the Broncos and Falcons, this is a legit team.
Hey, newsflash, though. Area reporter predicts reigning undefeated NFC champion team to win at home versus a team that has not made the playoffs this century. It's not a shocking take. I mean,
it's a fair point by Greg.
Maybe shouldn't get so upset at the media there, LaShawn, but you do you, buddy. Let's move on.
Falk is set. Snap is spot. Kick on its way. And it is no. It's good. It is good inside the left upright. The Giants were offside, but it doesn't matter. And the Giants are now 0-4.
Was that Jerry Seinfeld? That sounded remarkably like a low-level Jerry Seinfeld.
Oh, that's Bob Papa.
It's Bob Papa.
Come on, bro.
Sounded like Jerry Seinfeld.
Papa, he's one of the best in the business, but he is.
Well, so is Jerry Seinfeld in his business.
Well, no one's arguing that.
But. Okay, or was.
You're saying Seinfeld over the hill.
No, I'm saying he's, I don't think he's attempting to be, you know, this. Move on.
Okay. I mean, I'm fine with moving on. Anyway, Jameis Winston threw for 332 yards and three touchdowns.
It's just the old, you know, Sessler Seinfeld bit.
It sounded
every
I would,
show.
I would encourage you, if you're listening to this, to go back and say, did that sound a little bit like Jerry Seinfeld? I think I'm right.
Okay. It also sounded a lot like Bob Papa.
A lot like Bob Papa as well.
Anyway, so Nick Folk kicked a 34-yard field goal as time expired to give the Tampa Bay Buccaneers a 25-23 win over the winless New York Giants. Mark, the Giants have no idea how to close out a game, and their season is effectively over on October 1st because of it. Go figure.
It's over. I mean, I don't know what you
Stick
do to climb back into this thing. Nick Folk, by the way, I mean, it had the Bucs not eked this one out, Nick Folk, who missed two field goals, makeable field goals, and an extra point. This team that has had kicker drama dating back for far too long at this point cannot have a kicker costing them 7 points. The Bucs do not have all their issues figured out, but I will say this. It was impressive to see Jameis Winston start very hot. Then the team went into the tank for like 30 minutes of game time, and then they got themselves out of it and won this game with a really nice closing drive by Jameis Winston in the offense. This team, though, still needs – there are elements missing. I think it starts with the ground game. They did get an okay – Jaquise Rogers look okay today.
They'll get Doug Martin back soon.
That will help a lot if we get the Doug Martin
next
we
week,
saw in the preseason. They're not all there. They play the Patriots Thursday night. As for the Giants, I mean, they – a little bit of a spark on the ground, but there's really – so they're so imbalanced. They're so one-sided. It's the same thing. 27 first-half passes for Eli Manning. Threw something 40-something by the end of the game.
49.
It's just a ridiculous model for offense.
Wayne Gallman? Am I supposed to know who that is?
He's been essentially, you know, inactive week after week.
Fourth-round pick out of Clemson.
He looked okay. But, again, he can't run behind this line.
But, like, if you're in week four and your season's on the line and you're turning to Wayne Gallman to save the day,
it shows
the struggles that they've had to run the football.
The Bucs were missing – you know, they're two star linebackers in this game, Quan Alexander and Levante David. And they're not, everything's not clicking right now, but these are the types of wins that you got to get to sort of start stacking. All right, some things went against them. They blew a lead. And I find it really interesting that for all the Mike Evans and DeSean Jackson talk, I mean, the leading receivers on this team are Cameron Brate and Adam Humphries.
Well,
and this that shows how deep they are, though. That
they are deep, and they also it was a big performance by O.J. Howard, who got as open as I've seen any tight end get all season long against New York's pretty good secondary for a wild 58-yard touchdown.
That's the Giant. Things are now rolling downhill in a bad way, and Ben McAdoo's got to watch out. Because now 0-4, this is really the Giants have had so much success. If you threw the 70s, they had a bad stretch of bad go of it. But you have to go back decades to find the last Giants team that started off this poorly, and it's a big surprise. So Tampa gets the win, a banged up Tampa team still able to beat a desperate Giants team. That shows you how broken the Giants are. Let's check in with the Philadelphia Eagles.
Wentz takes the shotgun snap. Straight up the middle, handoff to Smallwood, and he's in! Touchdown, Philadelphia, from 3 yards out.
Merrill Reese, WTEL, with the call. Wendell Smallwood found the end zone in the fourth quarter, and LeGarrette Blount rumbled for 136 yards to help carry the Eagles to a 27-24 win over the Los Angeles Chargers. That's 0-4 for the Bolts. So there you are, the two winless teams, along with the 49ers. And that includes three home losses at the stubbed toe.
In a row.
Three in a row at the stubbed toe.
With the cross-down Rams off to a great start, this is a worst-case scenario for the Spanos family and long-suffering Chargers fans. Not only are you winless, not only is there a lot of criticism coming down on the organization and the home game experience with how many fans from other teams are pouring in to your soccer facility, you're now 0-4 while the Rams are the talk of the NFC at 3-1. What is it called? The battle for L.A.?
Fight for L.A.
The fight's over. It's October 1 and the fight's over.
Call it.
Let's face it. And the same old story, Greg. I know you always like to watch the Chargers. You're a big fan of Philip Rivers, and they do exciting things. But
like this year, I don't know if I've liked it this year.
Yeah, they just – the same old story with this team. They had a chance, and this happened last week as well, Greg. You said it downstairs, to get one more chance, down 3 points, get off the field, and – have a chance to win the game, and the defense couldn't stop the run, and they lost the game.
They did, and it reminded me a lot of that Chiefs game, and it reminded me a lot of what the Eagles did a week ago too. I think this Eagles team's getting a little bit of an identity, and Doug Peterson has got to love it. Last week, they run the ball 193 yards. They totally stopped the opposition 49 yards when they play the Giants. This week, they rush it for 214 yards, whoa, including in the key moments of the game. I mean, football teams just live for that. Offensive linemen and LeGarrette Blount just hammering things to close the game out, and they hold Melvin Gordon, the Chargers, to 58 yards. It should be a lot less if it wasn't for one long random touchdown by my buddy. What's his name? Eckler.
Yeah, the rookie.
Austin, I mean, Eckler. This has not been a good Chargers offense. That's what's surprising.
The offense has been mediocre. The defense, LeGarrette Blount, LeGarrette stiff-arming people like Beast Mode, a 68-yard run, which was a huge, huge play in the game. And Carson Wentz, who's been asked to do so much since coming to the Eagles, you know, this is a more manageable thing. You have him 17 of 31, 242 in a touch. Let the running game take some heat off the kid behind center, and this is how you win games.
I mean, they ran 74 plays. That is an incredibly high amount. So they're a ball control team, and you said it. They're asking Wentz to do less in his second year than he had to do as a rookie. Yeah.
I also think what helps Wentz is that former making the league candidate Zach Ertz, how many good games in a row?
Four years ago.
Huh?
Was that years?
Years and years ago. But, I mean, Ertz has been an incredibly reliable sort of safety blanket for Wentz, and it adds a lot to that passing game.
In a year where there have not been a lot of reliable tight ends. And one last note before we move on, and I think this is an indictment of the defense and the offense, quite frankly, the coaching staff, and let's be honest, the quarterback too. The Chargers are now 5-25 in their last 30 games decided by one score. Can't close out games, can't win close games. You're not going anywhere in the league. Let's move on.
The Sessler Bowl next week, Chargers Giants.
Oh my God. Put me under.
Breeze back in the shotgun, brings Ginn in motion from the left. Breeze fakes to Ginn, little shovel pass inside to Kamara. Running right side, breaks a tackle, down to the goal line, and into the end zone. Touchdown, New Orleans.
Drew Brees threw for 268 yards and two touchdowns, including that 12-yard connection with Alvin Kamara, as the Saints coasted to a 20-0 win over the listless Miami Dolphins at rainy Wembley Stadium. Greg, kudos to Sean Payton and company for bouncing back with two straight excellent defensive performances to get their season back on track. But let's start with the Dolphins, who seem to be careening off the tracks here.
We are one last play, Jay Cutler touchdown to Devontae Parker, meaningless in week 3 against the Jets. We're one play away from back-to-back shutouts in the NFL.
Unacceptable.
In 2017, for a coaching staff that's known for offense and a group of players that were expected to come together this year, Devontae Parker, Kenny Stills, Jarvis Landry, Jay Ajayi, Julius Thomas. I was going to do a making the leap one on them, and I ran out of time. I'm glad I didn't do it.
Thank God for the unstoppable march of time.
I mean, look at the Saints, who most people felt like they were going to get waxed against Carolina.
That was a very Adam West Batman line by me. Old chum, the unstoppable march of time strikes once again.
It's one of my favorite Dan transitions of the season. Let's clip that.
Very odd. You give 13 points to the Panthers. You come out, and this was one of the most – I mean, I don't know. Greg, I know you were up. How many of our listeners in London tweeted at us who were at this game painfully wondering at halftime if anything enjoyable would happen the entire time? It came around in the second half.
For the
but
Saints.
This is a big defensive showing for New Orleans.
Sorry, UK fans. You are 0-2.
Yeah, it's been...
It hurts. I wake up... I always am rooting for just good football and points and excitement because you just want the brand of football to be exciting for anyone there that's enjoying it for the first time or they're a casual fan. And the announcers, you know, Kevin Burkhart and Charles Davis, who play it very straight in general, were really making jokes about how sloppy the games were.
They were dropping like that. They were dropping
because it was all penalties and mistakes. And then a couple things. Jay Cutler had to be looking up at that broadcast booth and thinking, "Oh, maybe I should be there."
Because
that was his team. He was going to be with Burkhart and Davis, and he has to. Doesn't he have to be in the back of his mind wondering like, well, did I come back?
The body language, and I don't want to read too much into it because I think it's just natural to be this way, between Adam Gase and Cutler at the end of this game was negative. And I thought that Adam Gase challenged the Dolphins this week when he called the offense essentially garbage. It's a thing where a team,
nice move.
Team either comes out and responds to that or they do what they happen today, and they really do look like that.
When you said Jay Cutler and body language, I thought you were saying when he was split out wide in that wild card.
Oh, that was
hung his arms like a teenager that had to go to church on Sunday.
Yeah. He was not effectively sort of playing that wildcat scenario very well.
I'm a little bit annoyed because I'm not the only one, but so many of us got sucked in a little bit by the Cutler signing and this idea that, oh, they're going to be okay, you know, given this situation. Things could change, but I was more than anyone.
Things could change.
But there's a very real chance.
We don't know anything. These teams are all going to change. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
There's also a chance that Jay Cutler is washed up.
Yeah.
And it was a desperation signing, and it might not work out, and he might not even be on the field 2 weeks from now. We'll have to see.
Let's give the Saints some love and some attention For them, it was a beautiful game because their defense can now shut down problematic offenses. Yeah, they were playing the Dolphins, but it doesn't matter. They weren't a defense that could stop anyone, and they have a four safety look that they're showing now, which is giving some opposition problems, dime defense, doing some pressures. Cam Jordan's playing very well. And on offense, it was possession football. Even though it was a low-scoring game, every time they got the ball, especially in the second half, it's a six-minute drive. It's a five-minute drive. It's a four-minute drive. Really, throughout the game, they were moving the ball, keeping their defense on the field, and they're suddenly 2-2. I mean, they're in the mix. There's no reason they can't be in the mix. Believe, Dan. You don't believe it.
Pass. 7-9. Moving on.
Stafford will take the snap. Does. Gives to Amir. Amir hesitates. Fighting. Inside the two. Inside the one. To the end zone. Did he get in? No signal yet. That's a touchdown. They need to look at that.
And they did look at it, and it was a touchdown. That's my boy Dan Miller, former interview subject of the pain rankings. There would be no Case Keenum magic on Sunday in Minnesota. Amir Abdullah ran for 94 yards on that touchdown, and Detroit's defense did the rest in a 14-7 win over the Vikings. Ooh, I have a juicy tidbit coming up based on that score. Get excited, America and overseas. The biggest story of this game, unfortunately, was an injury. Viking star rookie running back Dalvin Cook suffered a non-contact knee injury that is believed to be a torn ACL. They'll have tests on Monday to confirm it, but that's what the team fears. And based on Cook's face and his body language immediately after, he seemed to know something very bad happened with his knee. Mark, it's terrible news, and it could have the effect of short-circuiting another Viking season.
Absolutely. I mean, I can't think of, you know, there aren't that many rookies that are playing a more pivotal workhorse role than Dalvin Cook. And the offense entirely changed after that because the drop off to Jerick McKinnon is steep. And there was a sequence in this game. You're coming out of halftime if you're the Vikings. You're up 7-3. McKinnon fumbles the ball in the second offensive snap of the third quarter for the Vikings. Detroit, down 7-3, drives quickly for a field goal, 7-6. The next play for the Vikings on their possession, Dalvin Cook, you can see him grabbing his knee. a non-contact injury, losing the ball, a fumble again picked up by the Vikings, by the Lions. The Lions marched down for a touchdown, 14-7, game over. It was a very bizarre game, but you now have a Vikings team without Sam Bradford. Hopefully he'll be back soon, but you have essentially Dalvin Cook ripped out of this offense. It is a drastic loss. It makes me look at Minnesota's season as potentially over.
I think that's going too far.
If they get
Bradford back, but you're right. I mean, when Latavius Murray was signed, people thought he was going to be the starter. So he's going to be the guy that I think they lean on in terms of running downs, but he hasn't really shown much special in Minnesota or Oakland for that matter. I think the receivers and Rudolph and the defense potentially, I mean, the defense played well enough. The Lions had 250 yards in this game. It's not like the Lions.
Not a great offensive game.
The Lions were going up and down the field, but they need Bradford back. Need him back.
They absolutely do need him back, guys. And I'm going to say, who says no? Let's play the who says no game.
I want to hear that tidbit.
That's coming up in a second. Adrian Peterson.
The Vikings say no.
For a fourth-round pick. Who says no? The Vikings pick up the phone, call up the Saints, offer a fourth-round pick for Adrian Peterson. Or who says yes? Who says no?
I would say no if I were the Vikings.
Would not trade.
You just said yourself it was a steep drop-off to Jared McKinnon.
I don't view from what I've seen from Adrian Peterson as the answer on any level.
I don't think the Vikings would.
Four carries today.
I don't think the Vikings would trade a conditional seventh-round pick for Adrian Peterson. I don't think they would sign him for the league minimum or give up anything. I think they'd much rather have. Well, that's just how I think they view him.
They can roll with the two guys they have.
The Latavius Murray and McKinnon.
Oof. Okay. Get off my back. I'm just saying. Throwing it out there. I mean, what else would they not do for it?
I think they could find – maybe there are some running backs out there that could be available. I'm trying to think off the top of my head, but he's not the one.
Okay. Sorry. Finally, my little tidbit. The last time a game ended with a 14-7 final score, take a guess. Everybody, give me a year. Give me a year. Mark.
2007.
Greg.
1996.
Loose cannon. Got you off guard, didn't I?
2001.
The correct answer. Week 4 of the 2004 season, the Giants defeated Green Bay 14-7. This is the 86th game that ended 14-7 NFL history, including playoffs. That the NFL media research.
I'm closest.
Department.
What do I win?
You don't win anything. You get Adrian Peterson for
great contest.
17th round pick.
Great contest.
Starting quarterbacks in that game, I believe, were two Hall of Famers. Brett Favre and Kurt Warner. How about that?
Nice. Nice tid, bro. Nice tid. That could come up potentially in the subreddit super contest on Tuesday's episode. Get ready, Greg, because it's coming back. Let's move on.
To win it for the Jets in overtime. Catanzaro out of the hold of Locke Edwards from 41 yards out. The snap, the placement, the kick is on the way. End over end towards the uprights. It is good.
Right down the middle, Bob.
Yeah, Bob Schusen and Marty Lyons with the call. Chandler Catanzaro kicked a 41-yard field goal with 28 seconds left in overtime, lifting the Jets to a wacky, strange 23-20 win over the Jacksonville Jaguars at the Meadowlands, a game that was 10-10 at the half. The Jets got it up to 20-10. And had the ball deep in Jacksonville territory, looking to put the game away. And then Miles Jack had a really nice pickup of a backward pass from Josh McCown. He scoops up on a hop and sprints 80 yards the other way to make it a game. Josh McCown then threw a bad interception, maybe not his fault. The receiver slipped. That led to a field goal, 20-20, went to overtime. And then it got a little bit ugly because you had a game here with Blake Bortles. He stinks, guys. I mean, the guy cannot make a play. Another terrible game, although he did not get helped out. The Jets won this game, but the Jaguars very easily could have won this game in overtime. There was around midfield. It was a 3rd-and-3. Bortles hadn't even thrown a spiral all game, let alone made a dynamic connection with a receiver. And he throws a nice tight ball to Marquise Lee that would have set up the Jaguars 1st-and-10 right around the Jets 30. And Lee can't make the catch. So instead of 1st-and-10 in field goal range, they punt, and they never get a closer chance than that. Marquise Lee, by the way, a little later in overtime, misjudged a punt, which buried them back in deep in their own territory and then set up the Jets' game-winning drive. So, not saying the Jaguars are a bad team, because they certainly looked okay in winning two of their first three, but this is the type of losses that, that bad teams start to accumulate, where you come back but can't seal a game, and the Jets, the scam for Sam, maybe not going to plan, but at the same time, 2-2, and they have their dignity intact as a franchise right now, which a lot of people were not predicting last month.
They're an incredibly – maybe they're not a bad team, but they're erratic is the nicest thing you can say about them, and everyone's going to put it all on Bortles. But his top receivers are Allen Hurns and Marquise Lee, and the Jaguars' defense gave up 471 yards to the 2017 New York Jets.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not the recipe. I know they want to give the ball to Leonard Fournette all day. They did. He got the ball 29 times between his catches and his rushing attempts. They have to score 20 points and win this game. That's their recipe. So you don't give up 470 yards and all these points to the Jets. That's just not – they can't be like that.
Where are you at, Dan? Because I would say you were having fun down
– Oh, it's over. Scam for Sam is gone. Dan's all in on them making the playoffs. At this point, I would say
–
I said it down there. At this point, it would be a little disappointing if they didn't make
it. Well, you were only slightly trolling Dan with that comment.
Right, and the problem for Greg is that it doesn't hurt me one bit because I kind of come out okay in this. Like, it's becoming clear now that the Jets are not horrendous. And what's going to happen now, it's pretty clear after a week, unless something changes. I know their schedule tightens up in the next few weeks, but they are going to get beat by good teams, like the Raiders handling them at home easily. But anytime they play a team that's like a middling or worse team, they're going to hang with those teams and win some games that they're probably going to end up winning 5 or 6 games. And that's going to be annoying in terms of them getting that quarterback they've been looking for 45 years. But at the same time, There was really pressing on me as a Jets fan, and I know I'm not alone. First, rooting against the Jets is not a fun thing to do if you're an actual true fan. And second of all, it was shaping up as an embarrassing season where you were just going to be monologue, late-night show jokes, and everyone nonstop memes on Twitter and that type of situation. It was kind of like that throughout the summer. And then, like, talent scouts saying, this is the worst offensive collection we've seen in the last 30 years. Like, stuff like that. Like, you can forget all that now because Todd Bowles, give him credit, this team is not embarrassing by any stretch. They're just another team.
I'll give you this. Next week, you play the Browns. You're 2-2. You play the Browns. And then you fast forward 2 weeks later, you got the Dolphins. That's a winnable game. And that sandwiches a game with the New England Patriots. Can you imagine being 3-2 and dealing with the Patriots? If you ever, ever, ever pulled that off, you will be sky high. We will have never seen a Dan that way during this show.
That would be
these
I guess,
are possible things.
About it. Yeah,
you're going to be 3-2 going into the New England game. Who would have thought?
So bad loss for the Jaguars. They went
I
in
see
there.
See what you did there. You already gave them the win over the Browns. Let's calm down here.
I'm not. I feel nothing anymore. Anyone. So I'm not angling for it. There's no psychological warfare occurring there.
Yeah, a bad loss by the Jaguars, who still have a major quarterback problem, and the Jets a nice win. And Bilal Paul, by the way, get comfortable, Matt Forte. Your turf toe, don't rush back because Bilal Paul should be their lead guy. And even your boy, Mark, Elijah McGuire, had a touchdown run that electrified the Meadowlands. So it was a nice, nice effort by the team. And I just want to share one more thing about the Jets. Should I save it for Thursday? I could save it for Thursday.
Let's hear from Keith. Is he in the show?
No, Keith was tied up with some husband activities. So he had to watch the game on the DVR. So we don't have Keith this week.
Sounds mysterious.
Yeah. He's retired now. And Keith and Deb, they do retirement fun things on the weekend. So he's playing catch up
on
the
Jets. Well, this is going to be a treat for him.
Yeah, for sure. I will save my other Jet thought for another show because we're running a little late tonight. So that is all the games leading into Sunday Night Football. So let's close it out with a little carry.
Oh, Sunday night.
Frank Gore is the running back. They fake it to him. Brissett gets hit as he throws. Was the arm coming forward? You've got Bobby Wagner picking it up, and Bobby Wagner will take it in. So if the play stands as Brissett goes down, and if the arm wasn't coming forward, it will wind up as a touchdown.
Yes, this one got out of hand in a hurry, down 15-10 at halftime. The Seahawks rip off, 36 points in the second half. 36 plus 10 equals 46, a 46-18 win over the Indianapolis Colts, who for a little bit while there, they looked like they might have had a big upset, but it just wasn't happening. Mark Sessler, the Seahawks woke up, the defense woke up, and the better team prevailed in their home.
Right. By the end of the game, it played out the way that I think during the week we thought it very... Look, I feel lucky that we had to get to week four for me to be blasted away by that hideous anthem. But the game script...
called it an anthem. You called it an anthem.
On to you, Greg. I'm done.
Got him.
Oh, come on.
No, I just think... I'm a little discouraged because the game, I was so excited. The Colts, to me, were thrilling tonight. And then the wheels... I'm just going to talk right through it. I'm going to talk... The wheels just fell completely off. And this was the game Seattle needed. I mean, to answer a lot of questions. And it starts with the way they ran the ball, to be honest.
We'll see. And I feel for Al and Chris and Michelle because they got stuck
in America.
Again, mostly Al, Chris, and
Michelle. A trio of millionaires.
you think Michelle Tafoya is a millionaire?
Absolutely.
All right, good for her.
You kidding me?
What world do you live in?
It's a nice job by Michelle. Not Martha's Vineyard, Greg. Sorry.
I'm just saying. What is that? What is that?
Anyway, a game that was so close at halftime got away. And I don't know, maybe it will carry over for the Seahawks. And now they'll start scoring again. But this also is a game that started going downhill fast. So I don't know how much to put into that second half. Because the first half, Greg, was about as ugly as it gets.
It was. But in the second half, for the second straight week, they found their magic. And Russell Wilson rushing for 23-yard touchdown where he was really fired up afterwards. I like to see that. You could almost see the frustration from the start of the year coming out and then throwing a beautiful pass downfield where he's running across his body. And you think, well, can they do that every week? Can they rely on these crazy plays? They've been relying on it since 2012. So it's really more than the defense is good week after week. And we'll see about this performance. It doesn't really change my mind. They had two major injuries, though, and that seems to happen almost every week for the Seahawks. You lose Cliff Avril earlier in the game, and you lose Chris Carson to what looked like a pretty serious injury at running back. So even when they win, it seems like they lose a couple guys.
When the air cast comes out, it's never good. But the good news in the backfield was that someone emerged. And again, hard to tell what to make of the second half of this going forward. But J.D. McKissic, he had an excellent cut-and-go run where he looked extremely fast. And then later in the game, once the game had gotten out of hand, he had made a nice catch in the end zone for another touchdown. So maybe they unearthed a weapon in that backfield that they can use. We'll see what happens next now. Thomas Rawls, a healthy scratch in this game. Eddie Lacy actually was running pretty well when he did get some work in this game. C.G. Procise, he got him in the mix as well. So we'll see what happens going forward. No Chris Carson, you could probably safely assume.
With the McKissic touchdown run, which the three of us, I think, kind of stopped us in our tracks. And it was when you started, this game was just blown wide open at that stage. That the replay, they kept showing it in sort of three quarters, speed motion. I wanted them to show it in real time because the speed and the quickness, Seattle keeps unearthing these running backs out of nowhere.
It's fun when the season starts to take shape and the games start to feel like they mean a little something. And next week, the 2-2 Seahawks go on the road to the 3-1 first place all by themselves,
saucy
Rams. And you start thinking, all right, if the Rams can win that game, then you start worrying if you're a Seahawks fan.
All right. So save for the preview pod,
hey,
Greg. But nice little tease. A little dish. And next time you hear from us will be on Tuesday when we'll recap the Monday Night Football matchup between Mark.
I was looking at a clickbait article.
Oh,
on the internet.
Come on.
What is the matchup?
The show is still going. It's the Redskins. It's the Chiefs. It's a pretty good Monday
show
night game.
I checked out about three.
I was a bit of a
lot
of Avil Magnifico there, Mark. I got to be honest with you.
I looked at something that captured my attention on the internet. So.
Do you care to share?
Not really.
Yeah, I didn't think so. So we will be back on Tuesday recapping the Monday Night Football game. Yes, the subreddit super contest is back on Tuesday, maybe for the last time. Maybe it will keep going on, Greg. I know you're excited, so make sure you check out the subreddit.
That'll get everyone tuning in.
Get the subreddit. Get sign up for the subreddit. Erica, the loose cannon, will be posting the latest qualification thread, I'll call it. I'm just making up stuff now. And that'll be fun.
So. You know better than to throw random, quizzical type things at me late on a Sunday night, Dan.
I know. All right, let's go. Let's go. This is Dan Hansa signing off for Quiet Storm, Nick Shook, the old boss, the and the loose cannon. Oh, the throne of sleaze. It's in trouble. Till Tuesday.